The following content is provided by MIT OpenCourseWare under a Creative Commons license. Additional information about our license and MIT OpenCourseWare in general is available at ocw.mit.edu.
What we have been talking about, we're dealing with the reflection of waves at the interface. And don't forget why we're doing it. At the beginning of this chapter, I said that when we deal with the transport between 2 points, point one and point two, we can think about what's the amount of, let's say, when we deal with heat, heat flux going from point one to point two, and what's the reverse amount of from point two to point one. And to find out that, what we need is the transmissivity, how much of the particles or waves coming towards point one transmit reaching point two. And we derived, for example, when electron wave come towards interface, you have reflection and transmission, and from that, knowing how to calculate reflection transmission coefficient, we can calculate the flux, how much the particle flux going from going across this potential barrier. So effectively, I can take this as a point one, and the other side as a point two. This 2 point doesn't have to be physically far apart. I can just focus on the two sides of interface and say this is a point one, the other is point two. How much is going from left to right of the interface and from right to left of the interface. Right. And then in the last lecture, we are looking at electromagnetic waves. And we say this is the electron wave, and if I have a physical interface with the refractive index on the two sides different, and then I have a wave comes in, and the wave will have refraction and reflection. And in this case, the example we considered for electromagnetic wave is a little bit more complicated. In this sense, I'm dealing with a vector wave. Our Schrodinger equation, that wave function is a scalar. And also, I try to do, at least in all my operation, I'm dealing with the case when the incidence is not a perpendicular. The wave comes towards the interface with the angle. So this is the long direction. And I have the incident angle, reflection angle, and transmission angle. Right? And so in the last lecture, what I derived in class is set of conditions to satisfy at the interface. One is the incident angle equals reflection angle. And remember, the underlying assumption that I was making is that the interface is flat. There's no interface roughness here. So in this case, it's more like a mirror-like surface. And for those kind of specular surface, we know the incident angle equals the reflection angle. And also, I have N1 sine theta I equals N2 sine theta t. This is the Snell law for reflection that just show that at the interface there is a bending of light if the two refractive indices are different. And then those are the simple part, and I also derived in the lecture what's the fraction of the electric field. So if this is the I considered a parallel wave or a TM wave where the magnetic field is perpendicular to the interface. And I derived the reflection coefficient, which is the this is the amplitude of the reflected field divided by the amplitude of the incident field. And this one we have N2 cosine theta I minus N1 cosine theta T and N2 cosine theta T plus N1 cosine theta T. This is the reflection coefficient, and I have similarly corresponding expression for the transmission coefficient N1 cosine theta I and N2 cosine theta T plus N1 cosine theta I. I'm sorry. Here is cosine theta I, cosine theta I, cosine theta T. So those are for the reflection and the transmission, and the amplitude of the reflected fields versus the incident, the amplitude of transmitted field versus the incident. And those were the results we obtained in the last lecture. I went through relatively more carefully compared to other derivations. And in the rest of this chapter, I'm not going to do more detail than this. So we'll just give the results. So what we want is, as the case of the electron wave reflection. In the case of electron wave reflection, if you recall, here we have the reflection coefficient is the wave function of the incident. I have put a negative sign because it's going towards the amplitude is going towards this direction. And this one, I get a K1 minus K2 and K1 plus K2. And this is the case of electron wave or material wave reflection at the interface. Now, if you compare with what we have here, the electromagnetic wave, I don't have the normal incidence. I have oblique incidence. But when normal incidence, in the case of normal incidence, this theta I equals theta r equals 0, right? That's a normal, that's the case of normal incidence. So all this is 1. So you can say if I have normal incidence, I have N2 minus N1, N2 plus N1. And this is very similar to here. You see the similarity there? Okay? And similarly for the transmitted, this is the amplitude of transmitted, and this is a 2K1, K1 plus K2, and then you can compare the with the case of electromagnetic wave. They are, we went through different derivations. At the end, the results are very similar, right? And because those are all waves, and later on, I'm going to give you the expression for acoustic wave, and you will again see the strong similarity among those waves. And recall, in this case, we said if I want to calculate reflectivity, is the flux of reflection, or the transmissivity is the flux of transmission. And if you calculate flux, you'll find out this is the real part of K1 complex conjugate, real part of K2 complex conjugate, and times the T square. And with this, your reflectivity plus transmissivity equals 1. That's for the case of electron wave, right? And you can go to check your notes. We did show that those adds up to 1. And now for the same thing, if I want to consider the energy propagation, right? For electromagnetic wave, how much energy is reflected, how much energy is transmitted, I go to calculate pointing vector, because the Poynting vector is the energy flow associated with the electromagnetic wave. And I can calculate the Poynting vector of the incident reflected and the incident in the z direction. That's the going towards the interface. And you find out this actually are equal. This is the just the reflected divided by incident. That's the component is proportional, same as the magnitude. And in this case, it's r squared. Okay, and since I'm considering a parallel wave, so I just add the subscript parallel or transverse magnetic. And so again, this shares the similarity here for the particle wave. You will find out this is R squared, and the transmissivity, and you again do the transmitted and the incident. And in this case, what I have is for the N2 cosine theta t and N1 cosine theta I and the transmission coefficients. So those two expressions are called reflection transmission coefficients or in Fresnel coefficients. And here I have the reflectivity and transmissivity. These are the energy. So at the interface, given the refractive index, given the angle of incidence, I can calculate what's the fraction of energy reflected, what's the fraction of energy transmitted. And that's for electromagnetic wave. And for particles, like electrons, I can calculate what's the fraction of the particles go over the barrier, what's the fraction reflected. Yes? Negative for this one? There is a negative sign here? Then I got to, I think I checked that the book is more accurate. Yeah. I'll go to double check. I think this, most of this expression I checked several times in the book. Huh? Negative in the numerator. Only for here, but then this is positive. So add the negative in the front. Okay. So that all actually is more similar to here. So that's probably right. Okay. What I want to make is from here some discussion. What this tells us, some familiar phenomena. First is the critical angle. And total internal reflection. If you look at the Fresnel law, where I have N1 sine theta 1 AI equals N2 sine theta T, so if N1 larger, say smaller than N2, okay, sine theta T equals N2 N1 sine theta I. So that means in the case of I go from vacuum, which has the smallest refractive index, 1, and then they go to water, which has solids, has a larger refractive index, the angle of transmission will become smaller than angle of incidence. But if in the opposite case, if N2 is larger than N1 is larger than N2, and then I have this angle N1 sine theta I, that will be larger than incidence. So this is the incident and goes this way, right? That's when the case of N1 larger than N2. This is N1, this is N2. And you can say, well, what happens when this goes to 90 degree? The theta t. And when this one goes to 90 degree, I have an angle here, and this transmitted will bend to 90 degree. That's the maximum you can bend. And this angle here is the critical angle, theta critical. And this theta critical is when theta sine theta t equals 1. So sine theta critical is N2 divided by N1. Right? So if you take a refractive index about 1.4, 1.5, plug in there, you can see 1 divided by 1.5 arcsine. That's the angle for critical angle. And so above this critical angle, all light will be reflected. There's no transmission. The pointing vector going into the second medium will be zero. So for theta I larger than critical angle, what you'll find is this one goes to zero, reflection goes to one. And when we discuss the electron reflection at the interface, we have a similar situation. That is when the energy of the electron is less than this barrier height, the step potential height, the U, then we have reflection is 100% is one, transmission is zero. But remember, in that case, the wave function sine t is not zero. There is an evanescent wave. Recall that? And we will have similar situation in this case, because you can say, even though my angle is larger than this is getting to 90 degree, above that, my sine theta will be larger than 1. But this Fresnel coefficient, this formula is still valid. Okay? So I can get, in this case, cosine theta t equals 1 minus sine theta t and this square. And this will be 1 minus n1, n2, sine theta I square. I can still go to calculate the sine theta t or cosine theta t. And recall that when we are written down the this field. So for example, the transmitted field, if you go to check your loads in the last lecture, this is the exponential. Let me erase the here to, you can check your loads last time, okay? So here is the I omega t minus N2 sine theta t x plus N2 cosine theta t z and divided by C0. This is the transmitted field, electric field transmitted into the second medium. So I have N2 sine theta t, N2 sine theta t equals N1 sine theta I. So this term is still real, right? So that means along the x direction, this is my x direction, this is z direction. That's the coordinate we used last time. So along the x direction, along the surface interface, you got a propagation wave. But then n to cosine theta t, so if we check here, cosine theta t, this one is larger than zero, so this will be 1 minus an imaginary number. 1 minus, this will be a square root of a negative number, right? Square root of negative, that's just an AI, right? A is a real number. A is a square root of absolute of this value. AI, so I substitute the cosine theta t into the expression here. So that will be cosine theta t will be AI. So this I times this I is minus 1. Right? So in the z direction, my field is still not 0, even though it's the total reflection. It's an exponentially decay field. You substitute this cosine theta t into the transmitted field, you find out the electric field and the same magnetic field is not zero in the medium, in the second medium, even though I have 100% energy reflected. And this is similar to the case of evanescent wave for the electrons. And what I have here is an evanescent wave for the photons. And this evanescent wave, and you go to calculate the transmissivity is zero, so it does not carry the lead time averaging, does not carry a lead energy flux. And those evanescent wave, including the electrons and photons, lots of interesting research going on in those days. I'll give you more example later on. So this critical angle, we have some electric engineers, they should be very familiar. That's the principle for a lot of devices, optical fibers, where you have a core here, you have cladding and the surrounding, and the core has a higher refractive index than the cladding. So when you launch your laser beam into the fiber core, and if the angle of launch is larger than the critical angle, it will just bounce back and forth, right? Does not leak outside because it's 100% reflection. So you can propagate as long as it doesn't get absorbed, you will propagate and get confined inside the core of the fiber. And the same thing, if you make a semiconductor laser, it's a lot longer. Fiber is typical circular geometry. Lasers are typically planar geometry, but it's the same principle. So what you have is an optical region, and the real light emission region is maybe thinner quantum well, and then you have the this cladding region, which is made up of the optical inside the surrounding the quantum well, you got one medium has a higher refractive index than the surrounding this medium. And again, the light emitted will be only confined inside this core region. You got the index guide your index profile, guide your wave inside the core, so that the light eventually coming out at the cleaved surface, at the edge coming out. That's the semiconductor lasers. So those total internal reflection phenomena that happens when the angle of incidence is larger than the critical angle is widely used. And you can also understand why you can't bend the optical fiber very sharply, right? If you bend the fiber sharply, now in this section your angle, although in this section your angle of incidence could be larger than 90 degrees, but you get this here, if the bend is too sharp, the angle of incidence is less than the critical angle, so your light will leak out. Okay. And so this is the total internal reflection and critical angle. Another phenomenon that's also interesting is the Brewster angle. And this happens when the theta I plus theta t equals pi 90 degree. Okay, in this case, it turns out our theta, the parallel or TM wave, the reflectivity is zero. So, but we did not do the derivation. If we have done the derivation, we can derive a similar expression for the Fresnel coefficient for the perpendicularly TE wave, electric field perpendicular to the plane of incidence. And I gave the, you know, this expression in the book. In that case, it turns out that this one is not zero. So even though you can have a circularly polarized light coming towards the interface, which means you have equal amount of TE and TM wave, but once the reflection, you can get only, in this case, this one is TM, so TM is zero, and TE is reflected. And if you plot this reflectivity as an angle of incidence, so here you'll get at the Brewster angle, this is the this one incidence is a theta Brewster. And Brewster angle, the reflectivity is zero for the parallel components, and the but this one, the perpendicular is not zero, and parallel is zero. That's a theta Brewster angle. So you all have similar this kind of experience in the summer afternoon. You drive in the highway, you will see the there seems to a spot of black water in front. You got a different polarized light reflection, different polarization, and so those are the some comments. And the other comment I want to make is, so far, the derivation I gave is based on real refractive index. And if you think about two lectures ago, when we discussed electromagnetic field propagation inside medium, we defined the refractive index, complex refractive index, as n, capital N equals m plus I kappa, right? Kappa is the, for example, in the derivation, it actually looks like it coming from the electric conductivity of the medium. So that's the electron motion and the collision. And this part typically represents the absorption, the loss of the intensity along the propagation direction. I did not give you the details. But if you have, you read the book, you will see if I have an electromagnetic field propagating inside the medium, and I can find out that the intensity actually decays exponential minus alpha x, well, this is the x direction. When the alpha is related to kappa as 4 pi kappa divided by lambda 0. That's lambda 0 is the wavelength inside the vacuum. Right? So this one, you can see the intensity decays exponentially, and that decay is a loss to the surrounding due to the absorption of the medium. So this, and my derivation so far did not consider the case where you have a long zero kappa. I assume that N is real part, real. Right? So what happened, what I should do if N is not real? You can go back, do the rederive, do all the derivation, and then you'll find out that the only thing you need to change is just the replace that real part of N by the imaginary part. So all the expressions are the same, For example, if you use the Snell law, if the n1 is still real, sine theta I, and then n2 is complex, so I replace with a complex sine theta t. Well, in this case, the angle is hard to explain, right? You get a complex angle. What does that mean? Well, you can go, you can always do your math part. So you get sine theta t equals n2 n1 sine theta I. So let's say it's a complex number a plus bi, right? And you can similarly get cosine theta t is 1 minus sine theta I squared. You see, you can do your complex number operation. You get a c plus di. And then you substitute into your expression. Okay? For example, here I have sine theta t now is complex. Cosine theta t is also complex. I plug in there and see what kind of expression I have. Okay? And if you do this exercise, you will find out your wave. So let me just write the exponential factor. This term I can still calculate based on the Fresnel coefficients. So here, based on replace this n2 by the complex number and all the angles calculated according to Fresnel law. The Snell law, right? So I can calculate the transmission coefficients. I can know the amplitude here. Now I look at the phase factor, okay? Phase factor here. And that is exponential minus I omega t minus. So I plug in n2 sine theta t. If n1, n2 sine theta t is still n1 sine theta I. So I have n1 sine theta I times x. That's my first term, right? So it's still real. And second term is n2 cosine theta t. So plus n2 is n2 plus I kappa 2. Cosine theta t is c plus di times z, that's z here, and divide by cosine 0, divide by c 0. So this will be my phase factor, that exponential factor inside. And you will find out in this case, in the z direction, you do this manipulation of the two complex number product, right? And you get, if you do the two complex number, what do you get? You get another complex number. So let's say this is C1 plus D1I, right? So you go to check. This is the real. So I have the real part is where the constant phase. Okay? That's the real phase. The amplitude, this I will mean the amplitude will decay exponentially because this I times that I gives you a real number. So amplitude decays exponentially and constant phase and constant amplitude plan are not the same. So it turns out if you have a wave comes in here and the constant amplitude, this decays. These are the plans of constant amplitude. But the constant phase are along this direction. So what you have is you get a so-called inhomogeneous wave once your medium absorbs. And so those are the some comments. But the point is those expressions are still valid. And when you calculate the reflectivity, transmissivity, okay? And remember, the pointing vector, time average pointing vector, is 1 half real part E cross H, complex conjugate. So when I do this, I really have to put this as a real part, because otherwise this is the energy. Energy is always real. Okay? So I plug in the real part, and I think what I have here will be the complex conjugate. Complex conjugate. Okay, you just go to check from the pointing vector, you get this factor, prefactors. Otherwise, everything else, the calculations are identical. So those are the case for a single interface electromagnetic wave. And you can see what I want to point out is we have, in this case, the total internal reflection phenomena that is similar to the reflection of an electron wave at an interface. And in that case, we have the evanescent wave for both electrons and for photons. But there are some subtle difference. This one I have not sat there for a long time. I just want to make the comments. Maybe you can come back to tell me the subtle difference. Remember, when I consider the electron wave, I'm doing the Lorentz incidence. For Lorentz incidence electron wave, I got the evanescent wave there. But for the electromagnetic wave, that evanescent wave concept comes only at the oblique incidence. Okay? Right? At Lorentz incidence, the Snell law always satisfied because sine zero is zero. So I don't have a problem. So there are some differences. And I have not sat there and consider what does this difference truly mean. One thing you can think about this is the satisfaction for the wave vector along the x direction. So this is the component of wave vector in the incident side that should equal to the wave vector in the along the x direction in the second medium. This is a requirement when you have oblique incidence. Your implant wave vector are equal to each other. That's because this wave vector also is related to the momentum. So it's more like a momentum conservation. And the second thing, if you do electrons, you can also go to think about oblique incidence. What happens when electron comes to the interface at oblique incidence? Electron wave can go all direction. You will have some electron coming towards. You can put down this following the same strategy and see what are the subtle differences really mean. Okay? And we have shown the similarities, and what I want to show next is for the acoustic wave, photons, right? We have done electrons, photons. Photons, let me do it very sketchily, and I'm not going to do all the math, but and if you read the book, and I'm not doing it as we derive photon. When we derive photon, we did discrete atoms, and now I'm more dealing, the math I gave in the book is actually doing real acoustic wave, continuum acoustic wave approximation. So acoustic wave, again, the point I want to emphasize is the similarities. And acoustic waves, you can derive acoustic wave equation from the Newton's second law, F equals ma. That's the starting point for deriving acoustic wave equation. And you try to relate the force to the local quantity in solid, or acceleration to the local quantity in the solid. So if I have a solid, okay, and I take a point and take a control volume around a point. And I want to write down the Lewdin second law for those small control volume. So what would be the force related to?
The acceleration.
Yeah, so I want to, at the end, you want to eliminate, so get one variable equation, right? Just like, for Maxwell equation, we have four equations, but we can eliminate the other variable and write down one equation for the electric field. So if I want to write the F equals ma locally, think about if you're familiar with the fluid mechanics, what do? Navier-Stokes equation for this in mechanical engineering. Stress. And what else? Strain velocity. Right? So you have velocity, you have stress. Or you do solid, you can do the same. So you can relate your force at any plane if you have, this is the law of that, I should probably use a head to distinguish from refractive index. So the norm times the stress, you project your stress into the normal direction you're considering. That's your force, right? And if you want to write down the details, you take a control volume, you do your force balance, you have a left force. You have, if you have a cubic, you have six surfaces, you do your force on each one, and the difference will give you the left force on this control volume, right? And then you try to, you relate the acceleration to the velocity. That's the local velocity of the elements. So if we do acoustic vibration, right, it has a velocity of that vibration. And you can relate this velocity, I'm not doing derivation, I'm just giving you idea if you have to do it, have to read through this. Those were the logic there. So the velocity is related to dx, dt. The x is the position, right? And this can be further related to the displacement, where the displacement is just the position vector minus the equilibrium position. That's the relative motion, because the equilibrium position doesn't depend on time, right? So now you relate, you can say you have a relation between local stress and local displacement. But local displacement can be further in solid mechanics, what you learn. If you learn stress, what's the corresponding conjugate? Strain. So you try to relate the displacement to strain, right? So here, the displacement is related to strain vector tensor. So if you have strain is, if you just have one-dimensional bar, the strain is, if you pull the bar, the strain epsilon is the length divided by length. Right? The increase in length divided by the original length. That's the strain. Strain, Hooke's law, Young's modulus, this is related stress to strain in the simple 1D case. Now, if you have three-dimensional case, the strain is related to the displacement by dUi dxj plus dUj dxi. Okay, that's just solid mechanics. So I'm not requiring you master this. I just want to show you where you can go from F equals ma to derive a master equation for acoustic waves. Now you get this stress strain. So you relate. You can say you relate velocity to local displacement. Local displacement to strain. So here you have a strain on the left-hand side, or the right-hand side, eventually. you have stress on the right-hand side. And then you can eliminate one of these two variables by using the relation between stress and strain. That's a constitutive relation. The stress and strain relation, here stress is a tensor, so that's why you have a hat, two bar. It's not a vector. Okay, so what it has? It has a sigma ij, right? I equals 1, 2, 3, j equals 1, 2, 3. You have line components, you have symmetry of the components, sigma ij equals sigma ji, and the stress is related to strain through the constitutive relation and coefficients. This is second order tensor. That's a second order tensor. And that coefficient is a fourth order tensor. I don't want to do the derivation. You can see it getting very nasty, right? So this one is really a fourth order tensor if you want to do the derivation. So 1, 2, 3, 4, and this would write the product of two tensors using special sign, two dots there. And this has 81 components. Fourth order is 3 by 3 by 3 by 3. 81 components. You can see, actually, the solid mechanics guys have to deal with all those every day. And so those are the, with this, you have a strategy to develop acoustic wave equation. And you can see it's going from a Schrodinger equation, which is scalar, to electromagnetic wave equation, which is a vector, to acoustic wave equation, it's more complex, increasing complexity. And so I'm jumping now. I'm not going to go to the details. And now the point is, doing this, you can derive a wave type of equation for the lattice displacement, the velocity of this displacement locally. And then you can calculate the energy flux. So acoustic pointing vector, that's very similar. To the electromagnetic pointing vector, so the power of acoustic wave is the real part minus 1/2 real part of velocity complex conjugate dot the stress tensor. So a vector dot a tensor gives you a vector. Okay. So again, you can see the similarity, right? The pointing vector, acoustic, the electromagnetic pointing vector, we give here 1/2 real part E cross H complex conjugate. I have V times stress. And if you go to check the particle flux in Schrodinger equation, I also written as real part of psi times gradient of psi complex conjugate. So lot of parallelism among the waves. And you can then do the wave reflection. If I have acoustic wave comes in, now once you do this wave equation, you'll find out the acoustic wave has three polarization. We talked about the Fourier has three polarization. This is the wave propagation direction. I can have the vibration of the element perpendicular to the direction of propagation, that's a transverse. And there are two directions. I can decompose any direction into two transverse directions. So I have two transverse. I can also have vibration along the propagation direction. That's longitudinal. Okay? So if I have acoustic wave coming towards the interface, because I have three components, three possible, okay, one is a longitudinal, and this two are transverse. So I got a more complex interface reflection process. A wave comes in, okay? And if the wave vibration direction is perpendicular to the plane of incidence, if it's going this way, okay, because there are two transverse, right, vibrational direction. if it's a perpendicular to the plane of incidence, they very similar to electromagnetic wave. What you have in this case is just a one reflection, one transmission. And if it's a normal incidence, that reflectivity for normal incidence is Z1 minus Z2, Z1 plus Z2. Well, this Z is density times velocity. Okay, it's called acoustic impedance. This is very similar to the case of normal incidence we have here, N1 minus N2, N1 plus N2, or K1 minus K2, K1 plus K2, right? So you can see the analogy there. That's one major point I want to make. Acoustic wave comes in fact, we know very well every classroom designed so that we can minimize this acoustic reflection. The acoustic effect, you go to cinema, you want to design it such that you get the best effects, acoustic effect. You don't want a lot of echoes. And the complexity really comes. So this is if this is a perpendicular to vibration, that's called a shear SH horizontally polarized. Or you can have, if you have a wave that comes in and the vibration direction is in the plane of incidence, then you got trouble. Because in that case, this wave can also excite a longitudinal wave. So you may have one wave reflection. This is a transverse longitudinal. Okay? You have each one has a corresponding Snell law. So the reflection angle, transmission angle, that's the even the reflection angle, because the velocity are different, so the Snell law will be modified. And you get a two transmission, one is longitudinal, the other is transverse. And if your crystal, if your medium is not isotropic, you get actually two transverse acoustic wave, one longitudinal. And you get a three transmission. So that's the complexity. And we're not, I gave you some formula in the book for those who really have to do those calculations, but I just want you to know the phenomenon here. Okay, you have acoustic wave, same thing as optical wave, as the material wave, electron wave coming towards the interface. You get the reflection, you get the refraction, and there are ways to calculate the transmissivity of those waves if you have to do it. Okay, so that's the basic message there. And now, making one more comment, which I will come back later on to why I'm mentioning the acoustic wave. Of course, one purpose is to show the strong analogy among all the waves. And the other purpose is to show the origin of a very important effects in nanostructure, in particular if you do heat transfer. That is because those wave reflection means the energy doesn't go forward, right? So that's a resistance for the heat flow. And this resistance for the heat flow create interface resistance. So you have, when you got an interface there, heat flow across the interface, you'll have some interface resistance. You can think the same way if you have electron go through the interface. Because the electron reflection, you have created a current, a resistance to the current flow. And photons, we use the interface reflection to cut off the radiation exchange. And the best example is where you often, between hot and cold, you put a reflection medium. You put a foil there to reflect, right? So all this has analog in different fields, and I come back to formulate how to calculate those in more quantitative way. So those are the process that happens at one single interface. What I'm going to do next is to add more complexity, add more interface, right? As I said, emphasized at the beginning of this chapter, when you go to nanostructure, the interface is dominant. You have to really appreciate the importance of interface. And the most one of this effects we talked is once you have an interface, that will reflect the waves that come towards the interface. And now if I add, rather than just one interface, okay, let's look at what we have here. And here I'm not going to give you a lot of derivation. I'm just looking at the phenomenon process, emphasize more on the what happens. So I have now more than one interface. So give me a film as an example, right? I have two interfaces. I have I put a glass there. But now I'm thinking more, my glass is very thin, a thin film rather than a thick wall. We'll discuss the thick wall situation later on. So I have N3 inside, separated by a film, and come into the third medium, inside, outside, film, inside. So I have an extra interface, and you can see that every time I have this refracted wave hit the second interface, the same process will happen, right? I have the reflection, I have refraction. Okay? And those reflection coming towards back, towards this interface again. Again, I have another reflection and refraction. So I got a refraction now actually coming back to the original surface. It looks like it's a reflection from the original surface, although it comes physically originally from the refraction of. So I have this reflection. And again, you have this happens many times. Right? That's your physical process that goes on inside the film. At the end, as an observer, if you observe on this side, you see how much reflection I have. I got to sum up all of this. That's the amount of reflection I have. And if you are on this side, you measure the transmission, you sum up all of those, you get your transmission. Right? So, in theory, I have given you the formula to calculate the reflection and transmission at each interface. Reflection, so the Fresnel formula applied to here, and Fresnel formula applied here. You sum up all of those terms. You get your transmitted, you get your reflected. Right? And I also given, for example, the propagation. A plane wave propagated inside the medium. What's the relationship between the two inside the same medium? I know the relationship between the two points. That's the solution of the wave equation without any boundary condition, right? Plane wave propagation. So you can trace them up and find out, sum up and get a total reflection and total transmission. You have a question? And okay. So that is the physics there. But in terms of implementation, how you do that, there are different ways to do it. One way, as I'm explaining here, is summing dual infinite series. I sum all of this one, this one, this one, and sum infinitely. And this you will get the results, correct results. But that's not the most efficient way. Mathematically, it's not the most efficient way. And there are better ways to do it. One other way to do it is I just say this is a, I don't use the Fresnel coefficients anymore. If I just say this are the backward propagation. So I add up all this backward propagation ones. I say that's, I combine them into one. And inside the film, I have combined all the forward propagating, all the backward propagation into one. And then transmitted, I combine into one. And in this case, I do not know the relationship between the field here and the field here, those two fields. If I do this modular tracing, I know the relationship because the Fresnel coefficient gives me, right? But here, since I sum up, I don't know. I just know this is forward, this is backward. There's a coefficient I need to decide. Okay, so if I do this transverse wave, and the amplitude at this point I don't know, the amplitude at this point I don't know. And here, the reflection amplitude I don't know, and transmission amplitude I don't know. But I can use the boundary condition. As I said, when we derive Fresnel coefficients, we say the tangential component of the electric field and magnetic field are continuous across the interface. So I have two boundary conditions here. I have another two here. I have four unknown. One, two, three, four. The incidence, I assume I know. I want to know the fraction. Right? So I can solve that equation. I can find out what's the fraction of reflected, transmitted, or even inside. I can do it this way. That's one way to do it. And as I said, I'm not going to go through the math. I just say you can do it. But this is, again, not okay. It's good for if you have one layer of film. Now, if I do a lot of layer, I can have many different layers. Coatings are used so widely in various technology. You can coat one layer, you can coat many layers, right? So you got a lot of layers. Clearly, this is almost like impossible to trace because here you got the one reflection, but this one reflect back. You have to trace. You have to trace each of these straight into infinite times, right? And so even you do this way, it's still not very convenient if you do multi-layers. So the most convenient way to do multilayer is this so-called the transfer matrix method. The book actually presented you the transfer matrix method and didn't present that way. What I'm drawing here, this is the resultant wave method. The resultant wave means those are the results of all the sum, the forward, the backwards, or the results of all reflection and results of all transmission. That's where the limb comes from. And the transfer matrix method is, rather than dealing with looking at the incident, reflection, forward going, backward going, let me sum this up into one. So I sum up this into one. Okay, because I can always do vector sum, right? So I know the electric field and the magnetic fields here. So the electric field, because here is the x direction, and this is my z direction. So I have electric field in the, if I consider this is the EZ, HY, so H in the E in the Z direction. So let me see. And EZ 0, HY 0. And because I can relate this to the incident and reflected, because at the end, what you want to find out is the incident field. field, how much is reflected, how much is transmitted. That's the, most of the time, that's all what we're interested in. So I can always relate the field at this point, zero, this is the origin, and to the incident and reflected. So there is a, you can do all that relation, okay? So basically, I say if originally this is the EI and this is the ER, and now the electric field, I corresponding now the magnetic field. I can sum up all the electric field, all the magnetic field at the interface, and this is the component parallel to the interface. Okay, electric field, magnetic field, parallel to the interface. The reason I want to do that is because according to the continuity equation, the boundary condition, this one will equal, this is outside on this side of interface, will equal to inside, because the tangential component of electric field and magnetic fields are equal. That's the continuity relation. So I can relate to this is a EZ, HY. This is the inside now. That's outside, inside. And inside, 0, 0. And this is the point, at this point. And if I have a film, I can solve the electromagnetic wave equation for propagation inside the film, so I can relate this point to this point. That's the solution of Maxwell equation. And that relation is can be expressed as a 2 by 2 matrix. So that's the matrix I can identify from the solution of the Maxwell equation. And I relate to this point. So this is EZD and HZD. So I know this point is EZD, HZD. Again, the continuity say that will be equal in this point. Right? This point is this point. Same. That's my continuity equation, boundary condition. So this point is the field. Now, if I only have one layer, it's just the field transmitted. I only have one direction propagating. It's not like an incident. I have an incident going back. Transmission is only going that direction. Right? So I can relate this one through a ladder matrix to equal to BET. And this one is a 2 by 2 matrix. This one is 2 by 2 matrix. And this one is a 1 by 2 matrix. Because, say, at the end, ET is just a scalar there. So the purpose of doing this is now I can relate every point. So I can write down, given this, I have my E, EI, ER, and equals M1. That's, say, EI, ER equals this field equal here. That means it's also equal to M1 times this one. So it's M1, but this one is related to transmission, so M1B and ET. You can read the book to get the details. I'm giving you the strategy, the ideas behind the transfer matrix. Okay? So you can say once I have this matrix, I can just do an inversion. EI, ET, ER is the inversion of A, M1B, ET. So I can find the relation between, from this matrix product, I can find the relation between transmission, incident, reflection, and incident. That's what I need. I want to find the amount of transmission, amount of reflection. Okay? And this is a 2 by 2 matrix. This is a 1 by 2 matrix. And the inversion of 2 by 2 is a 2 by 2. So at the end, it's a matrix product. And this is called the transfer matrix method. And the beauty of this transfer matrix is you add in another film, one layer, two layer, you can see your this one, the point that this is related to this through M2. So if you have multi-layer, you just replace that M1 by M1 times M2 times MN. Any layer, you just add in. So it's very convenient to use because of these characteristics. Yes. Ah, 1 by 2 here, because if it's a 1 by 2 matrix, so this is a B1, 1, B1, 2, and times EI, ET transmission, right? So I would get a two term, right? 2 by 2, let's see. So you have 2 by 2, 1 by 2. Oh, it should be 2 by 1, right? I'm sorry. Okay, 2 by 1. So this is a should be B21. Okay, yeah, 2 by 1. Thanks. So, so that's the beauty of the transfer matrix method is that it's very easy to apply to multilayer structure. And in fact, people have used transfer matrix method for optical wave, for acoustic wave, and for electron waves. All those waves, they're transfer corresponding transfer matrix method. And it has been used for even for typical conventional heat conduction transfer matrix, or in the electrical engineering field, the transfer line method. All those have a similarity dealing with this kind of a multi-layer structures. And now coming back to the physics we want to look. Here I'm telling you the strategies to derive what would be the reflection transmission for one layer or multi-layer structure. And let's take a look at what you would get when you have multiple interface. And first, if I just look at one single layer, okay, again, here I'm looking at the optical waves, and you can have reflection, transmission through the film inside. And here I'm writing down, as one example, the reflection coefficient. This is the electric field ratio. This is the what's the reflected field divided by incident field. That's the ratio. And it's the Fresnel coefficient between surface 1 and surface 2, which we already learned how to calculate in the last lecture. That's the end of the lecture or beginning of this lecture I gave. That's the coefficient between 1 and 2. And then 2 and 3, Fresnel coefficient, E2i5, and 1 plus R12, R23, exponential 2i5. Well, this phi is 2 pi N2 d. This d is the thickness. And cosine theta 2 divided by lambda 0. So this is the d is the thickness, and this is the refractive index is the N2, and the cosine theta 2 is just the angle inside the medium, right? So now we have the reflection coefficient. We can calculate reflectivity from the square, and let me just I want to write it down so you can see what will happen. So here is R12 square. Assuming everything is real, the refractive index is real. And again, if you deal with the imaginary index, you do the more complex operation directly. Cosine 2 phi and 1 plus 2R12 R23 cosine 2 phi plus R12 square R13 square. R23 square. So the point of writing down this expression is really for you to see that cosine term. Okay? So cosine term means it will be a varying function, right? It's a periodic function. So when you plot the reflectivity as a function of this phi is either you change the thickness, you change the angle, or you change the wavelength, right? You will see that the reflectivity varies periodically. That's the familiar interference effects. So this is reflectivity, and this is a phi. So you change the thickness for the same material. If you change the thickness of your film, you see color change. Because different wavelengths, right? If you go to clean room, do deposition, if you do microfabrication, you'll see experienced person actually can look at the color and see roughly what's the thickness of the film. Because the color will tell you. And it's the angle also depends on the angle. Right? All this will change your phi. And similarly, if your film is non-transmitting, so you can calculate non-absorbing is 1 R transmissivity. Okay, and if it's it's absorbing, you have to calculate corresponding transmissivity of the film using the formula I gave in the book. And the other, so this is the familiar interference effect. Those periodic variation as a function either the incident angle or wavelength or film thickness is the interference effect. And the next effect is to look at the evanescent wave. Okay? So let's look at the evanescent wave. And in the case of critical angle, we get the cosine theta as imaginary, right? So when theta is larger than critical angle of incidence, and this is theta I. So the theta I, the angle of incidence, is larger than critical angle theta I. We have evanescent wave, and in that case, we know cosine theta 2 equals 1 minus N1 sine theta I divided by N2 square, right? 1 minus sine theta square. Sine theta 2 square. So this one is negative inside. You get an AI. We explain in this case, you feel the decay exponentially inside the film in the second medium. But if your third medium, okay, I have an N3 here, okay, and if you can write down your Schlieren law for every layer, you have N1 sine theta I equals N2 sine theta 2 equals N3 sine theta 3, right? That's your Schlieren law. N3 is the inside the third medium, what's the angle. Now, although this one could be, sine theta 2 could be larger than 1, but if N3 is larger than N2, then this one could be satisfying about there could be an angle theta I where theta 2 is imaginary, but theta 3 is real, right? Those are the Fresnel, the Schlieren law. And in this case, if you look at my phi 2 is imaginary because cosine theta 2 is imaginary. Phi 2 is imaginary. I substitute it in here. what I get? Exponential decay, right? Exponential function, here I get an exponential function, right? But it can be non-zero, right? And the point is, you substitute in, you find out for this region, what you can get is that R is no longer 1. If you have one single interface, your R is 1, total internal reflection. But when you bring the third interface close, before that exponential die out, if this phi, where you have D times all this, is not much larger than 1, so your exponential doesn't die out, you can have transmission. So what physically happened is here you have total internal reflection, you got this evanescent wave, decays exponentially. But then before it dies out to zero exponential, right, you bring your third surface in close to the exponential decay range, and the wave now began to revitalize, it propagating, because the theta 3 is a real angle. So it can propagate in the third medium. And this is the tunneling phenomenon. Tunneling. Okay? So the evanescent wave, when your medium is third medium brought close to the first interface, and this distance is of the order of wavelength, so you have to make your exponential factor there not very small. Then the wave can be revitalized and propagate into the third medium. So this is the tunneling of electromagnetic wave. And this tunneling, again, interference tunneling phenomena happens for both all those waves, electromagnetic wave, electron wave, acoustic wave. And for the electron wave, this is the example we considered. If you have one step, and when the energy is less than this U, this is U, you get a total reflection. All the waves bounce back. But you have an evanescent wave decay here in the third medium, in the second medium. And now you make your third medium, so you make a very thin film. And before this decay to zero, now inside this, in this side, the potential come back to below the energy. So if the potential is below the energy incoming one, you can have propagating wave again. So your electron can tunnel through. And the same expression, same derivation will give you the tunneling probability for electron wave. Let me say, give you the tunneling. The transmissivity for the tunneling of electron is 4e u minus e. That u is the potential barrier height, and the 4e u minus e and plus u square hyperbolic sine square, a square root of 2m e minus u, u minus e, u minus e, and h square d. So this is the transmissivity for the tunneling of the electron wave. And it can be approximated as 16e u minus e and u square exponential minus 2kd. This k, I just gave you quickly, k is 2m u zero u minus e h bar square. So you can say over a factor of k, inverse k, you feel that your tunneling goes to zero, right? When k times d is of the order of 1, this tunneling, very small transmission going through. Okay. And with that, I think I'll stop here. And this, yes, Peter? Tunneling, no, it's not a density of states effect. It is, I think, it's the really the wave mismatch, because you can multiply, this is for each energy. So you multiply your density of states, you get how many actually tunnel through. Whether, coming back to my question, the wave vector, because the electron wave here, when we talk about optical wave, is is the parallel momentum for that reflection. Here I'm considering 1D, so the momentum is the forward direction. So I'm trying to, I think I need some time to think what's the physics difference there. Okay, so we'll continue, and this is the basis for a lot of technology.